How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Masks Weekly Radio Show on Family Matters. Mask, mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles. If you know someone that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually sit next to in shul. All calls are kept strictly confidential. Again, our number is 718-758-0400. We still are offering parent support groups facilitated by therapists by Zoom. So if you want to join one of the Zoom parenting groups, give us a call to register at 718-758-0400. Sunday night, Yeshaya Krauss for Blended Families. Monday night, Dr. Debbie Ackerman. Tuesday night, Dr. Shmuel Brachfeld. Wednesday night, Rabbi Dr. Ben-Zion Twersky. We also have in-person group Tuesday night in Brooklyn, Dr. Trish Atiya. And Wednesday night in the Five Towns, Cheryl Friedman. So give us a call to register if you're interested. Tonight, I must say, I say it every week, because I am so, happy to have on the therapists that make time in their busy schedules. And believe me, when I say busy, this guy is busy. You can't usually get him. So I'm really honored. And I want to thank him for coming on. And that is Gavriel Fagan, who's the director of Tikkunim Counseling Services, which he will tell us all about. Welcome, Gavriel. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, thank you so much for having me on. It's actually my honor, absolute privilege to be here. Our relationship goes back, a long time, and tremendous hakar satov on behalf of the entire Kehila, Kahal, everyone, for the amazing work that you do and the amazing work that Mass does. It's really, I don't know what the community would look like without it.
Well, thank you. And I say that goes not only to me, but really to my staff. That really the ones that work hard to be there for the cloud as well. But yes, we go back a long time. And believe me, I'm so grateful that you made the time to come on, because I know you're very sought after. And your days are very, very long and not a lot of time to give away. So thank you on behalf of the CLOW as well for all that you do in helping keep families and children safe. So let's get right to it. You want to talk about Tikkunim a minute, please, about your counseling center?
Sure. Yeah, I'll talk very, very briefly, because I think safety is the name of the game for the upcoming Yontif. But our therapy group has offices now in Cedarhurst, Muncie, Brooklyn, Passaic, Lakewood, Pomona, Queens, and we primarily focus on sexual abuse issues, dealing with both victims of sexual abuse, perpetrators of sexual abuse, boundary violations taking place, schools, yeshivas. We do comprehensive evaluations, treatment, And we've been doing it for quite some time, and we learn a lot from every single client. And hopefully that experience that we've learned throughout the years in dealing with safety issues will, come out in terms of practical tips for parents tonight.
Well, yes, thank you. Tonight we're talking about keeping our kids safe over Yontif. And what we mean about keeping our kids safe is that, really, you and I know, I mean, mask is in our 27th year, over 120 some family, 1,000 families have reached out and attended programs and got referrals and went, to our groups, et cetera. And believe me, we both know that families have within their own family problems about family incest, molestation, and it's a very hard topic to talk about. So if anyone is listening that has children around them, you may want to go into another room to listen to tonight's show. We are talking about molestation, incest, and keeping our kids safe. So what's considered let's talk about what's considered appropriate parental supervision, especially on Shabbos and Yontif afternoon, because we know how many victims of abuse there are out there. That happens right under our roof, right in our home, right in our basements with families and guests that come. So, we need to know what we need to be looking for and how to look for it. So can you share with my listeners what your feelings are on this topic, please?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So a couple of, super practical suggestions. We all have long weeks, and Shabbos afternoon, Yontif afternoon, especially when we've probably eaten too much. We're not accustomed to eating heavy meals, over the course of Yontif, whether it's at night, but especially, heavy afternoon meals. So everybody's kind of natural tendency or natural inclination or desires is to take a nap. And in two-parent homes, the number one suggestion is that one parent needs to be awake at all times when kids are around and playing. We have to understand, right, when we talk about molestation, when we talk about inappropriate boundaries, et cetera, some of those obviously the more difficult situations are when somebody has planned out that situation or they've groomed a child. But by and large, these family situations are taking place essentially with kids, and kids do all sorts of stupid stuff and exploratory by nature, especially as they get older, hormones, curiosity, things that they've heard, so it's kind of understandable that they might have some questions or confusions, or just frankly acting like kids. So they're going to require some sort of parental supervision. So if you have, multiple families staying over, having some sort of rotation that's taking place, if there's no family over and it's kind of, two-parent home, taking turns, as nice as it might be, for everybody to kind of nap at the same time, parents really need to take turns and make sure that there's somebody that's there and available. That doesn't necessarily mean that they have to, be sitting on the floor in the playroom or in the living room or, wherever it's taking place. But just like we know with Hashgacha, right? There's a nichnas v'yotzei that the kids should know that there's somebody up, there's somebody available. This obviously is for chas v'shalom any emergencies that can come up, but also that the kids should know there's somebody there, there's somebody available. A parent can, look in and see how the kids are interacting, how the kids are playing. So that to me would be, number one suggestion is that there should be some level of observation from an adult that's taking place at all times when kids are really congregating together.
So the question becomes, everybody's familiar with stranger danger. And Rabbi Yanky Hurwitz put out, the book on safety. It's in all language, in so many languages, Hebrew, Yiddish, English. You can get it in the Sfarim store. You can get it online. And it's a wonderful book to sit and read with your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. Everybody with children should have one in the home and read it, not once, but often, especially before a yontif. But let's talk about we're saying family members, incest. What about the stranger danger? And somebody in shul may be invited over to the home for a meal and say, you know, oh, I'm so tired, I'll lay down on the couch. You know, let's talk about the stranger as well. Even though sure. We say a molester doesn't have to be a stranger.
Right. So I'm actually going to back up because I want to piggyback on you know, the premise of your question. And you're 100% right. The vast majority of therapists who work in this field generally will notice that it's usually that 15 to 17, 18-year-old boy who unfortunately is usually touching a younger sibling or cousin or a slightly older girl. So, you know, boys generally are going to, the target age, so to speak, would be, you know, 6 to 8. Girls, it's a little bit older. Generally, that's the activity that's taking place. All of the national statistics, and this bears out in our community as well, that upwards of 85, 90% of the times that anyone is molested, touched inappropriately by somebody, it's by somebody that they knew and knew really well. So that could be a family member, typically is somebody that they know really, really well. So, you know, the focus, especially when it comes to education, and this is why it's so difficult, because it's such a hard conversation to have, you know, with our kids about people that they might know. But the vast majority of the educational efforts need to be put into this notion of proper boundaries with the people that you do know and people that exist, you know, in your life, which is why the safety book, you know, does a wonderful job, because it could be the stranger danger, right? But we also have to worry about uncle and cousin and brother. And it's much easier to speak about safety when it comes to a stranger. It's much more complicated. It's messy. It's icky to talk about it when it could be somebody that's close to the family. So, you know, I just really wanted to make that point. And education programs, you know, education programs in school, vital, you know, all of the books, all of the shiurim, everything, you know, that said, you know, is critical. But we really have to highlight this point that it's statistically, there's this huge percent chance that it's going to be somebody that the kid knows and knows well, which is typically why kids don't report on abuse, because there's all this confusion. You know, about what happened, because when they're told about abuse, right, it's, if it's told about a stranger, right, it's going to feel icky, it's going to feel inappropriate, it's, right, whatever words we use, but that might not be the reality when it's somebody that they actually know.
Yeah, very true. And we know from our numbers at NASC that it is more a family member than a stranger. In all the years, when we look back at our calls, that is what we've seen. It's been an uncle, a relative, and it's men and women, boys and girls, by the way, sadly. But it has been yontif time. It's a huge spike in numbers after yontif. We get calls that something happened. They walked in a room. They saw something. A kid came to them. Their kid is acting different suddenly after. What's going on? And it could take years also before family member shares, many years, 10 years, 15 years, till a young child who is molested at 7 shares at 20, whatever is old, accident. Explain to my listeners why that is, because not every parent understands. Even we do trainings for parents and for therapists, they don't always understand why the take so many years.
Yeah, so in no particular order, very often, you know, the kid really does not recognize that something inappropriate happened at the time that it's actually happening. So we can speak to them about, you know, inappropriate and yuchi and good touch and bad touch. And at the time where it's happening, it might not be processed that way in any way, shape, or form. And going on that, it might even feel nice for that child of what's happening. You know, my parent told me that it might be icky or it might be inappropriate. It might be bad touch. That implies that that somehow it's not going to feel right or good. But there's some kids that on a physical level, we're obviously not talking emotionally or psychologically, but on a physical level, the behavior might actually feel good, which can create a lot of confusion based on what they were hearing educationally. The other part of it is that, you know, young kids see themselves as young, but they don't want to see themselves as too young, which means that they're going to take upon themselves a certain amount of culpability, a certain amount of guilt for an inappropriate behavior that occurred. Even if it's clear to us as adults that you have somebody older, you know, touching somebody younger, even the younger kid might take that guilt upon themselves and then because of that, keep it a secret. And I would say the fourth primary reason is a fear that somehow they're going to get in trouble. You know, that if they share this information, a parent's going to be angry at them. You know, even we see parents, you know, who are very proactive about telling their kids about safety issues, and kids still don't tell those parents. And they say, well, I told you 100 times about this, right? That's exactly what the kid was fearful of, right? That was going to be the reaction, that somehow they're going to be subtly blamed, you know, for what it is that happened. And I'll just throw out a final reason. You know, if you think about it, in the kid's mind, right, if he shares, he shares some of this information, the kid says, well, what's going to happen next Hanukkah party? What's going to happen at the next chasana? What's going to happen at the bar mitzvah? What's going to happen at this, that, or the other thing? If I share this information, am I going to break up the family? Is somebody, you know, going to be arrested? There's a tremendous amount of confusion about what the repercussions might be. And for all of those reasons, you know, by and large, it could very well be that kids do not share until years later.
And usually parents, you know, kids are acting out all those years and parents drag them to you know, psychiatrists, they need medicine, they're misbehaving, they diagnose them with so many different things, and really the underlying issue was they were molested, they're angry, they're hurting, they're scared, and they didn't share. So a lot of times families go through very, very many years of a lot of pain and confusion, like I said, before they share. And it's very sad. The more that we speak about it out there and we educate parents, the more parents can talk to their children about staying safe and being aware of things that can happen around them. So it's important that everyone attends any trainings that are offered on this topic. It is so important. And if anyone wants a training on this topic, please give us a call at NASC 718-758-0400, and we will arrange it for you, your neighborhood, your shul, your kid's school, parents, PTA. Give us a call and we will arrange it. Let's go back to family members. And many times parent may say, go give your uncle a kiss and a hug, go sit on grandpa's lap, or whatever it is. And the child may not want to and may be scared to say, no, I don't feel comfortable. They make me feel uncomfortable. So I'd like you to address that, please.
So this hopefully will be painfully obvious to everybody, but, you know, sometimes those things, you know, are important to repeat anyway. Children should not be forced into any physical contact with any other person on the planet. So we want to encourage close relationships that could include, based on the family, physical touch, if that's something that they are okay with. you might find that some kids recoil from certain relationships at certain ages. It does not necessarily mean, we don't want parents jumping to conclusions, oh, it must be that something happened, because why on earth would they not want to, sit on grandpa's lap, or uncle this, or it doesn't necessarily mean something. All it means is that if you're getting some level of resistance from a child, it means that there's a discomfort. It could be today, it could be for the next 3 years, it could be for a lifetime, it doesn't really matter. But kids need to recognize that their discomforts are acknowledged and realized by parents, and parents are going to react accordingly. So we never want to tell the kids, oh, give, go give Saba, go give Grandpa, go. They don't need to. If they'd like to, they will. If they see that's part of the family culture, so they'll be part of the culture. And if they're not interested, they're not interested. And we kind of have to leave it there.
So I you bring up kids, Ben Hasmonim, coming home, and there's a lot of free time. And there's we should really offer some ways to avoid, what are the best ways to avoid any struggles between a child that maybe is going to touch a younger child. And I'd like you to touch on what does the parent say to the child if they do catch them touching a younger child or another, sibling or whatever, a neighbor's kid? What is the first thing? Give them the language, please. The first thing they need to say, please, to their kids.
Okay, so you asked two questions in there. So let me do the first one first, and hopefully, the second one, which I think requires a little more time. So we can go into this more if you'd like, but the guys who are coming home for Bein HaZman, and parents need to recognize two things, two main things, I think. Number one is there's going to be the potential for a tremendous amount of boredom, and time needs to be structured. But you can't push and force that structuring of time for the second reason, and that is these kids were away in yeshiva. There's a certain amount of independence. No matter how much observation and supervision there is in yeshiva, kids are used to a certain amount of independence. They want to brush their teeth, they're going to brush their teeth. They do the laundry, make their bed, whatever it might be. There's a high degree of independence that's taking place. If they come home and feel like, oh my gosh, my parents are on top of me, right? You've now made potentially an issue much worse. So there needs to be this balance, right, between trying to make sure that a kid actually stays occupied in a good and healthy kind of way, but also making sure that you're not completely overbearing. Make being home something that they're really, really looking forward to, as opposed to, some sort of additional stress, which then, kind of leads to one more point, and then we'll go to the other question. And that is, especially with boys, I find, with my own kids, it's certainly true. There's everything right about asking the boys to help for Pesach, to do this, that, or the other thing, but they need a list. Give them a list. Here's what I expect you to do: this, this, and this, and I need this accomplished by such and such time. And then let it go. Let them do their thing. Whatever else they want to do over the course of the day, you've given them five things to do, seven things to do. Obviously, you tell them, listen, I apologize, something might come up, but one of the most unsettling things for a bacher is like, oh my gosh, every 5 minutes she's asking me to do something. She asked me to do three things, but they didn't come at once, and they didn't come at a list, and they couldn't do it on their own time and assert their independence. So, it becomes a friction. So kind of just wanted to put that out there.
I'm so happy you brought that up about, oh, mom, like she asked me 5 minutes ago, every 5 minutes to do something, because my friend's kids, they were talking Shabbos, how kids come home from Israel and they're not allowed to ask them where you're going. The minute they say where you going, go, could you help, whatever, ma, a whole year you don't know where I am. Why do you need to know where I'm going now?
Right,
So
right.
it's not only about asking them what to do, it's also where you're going and what are you
Yes.
doing. And so it's about the every 5 minutes that really makes them nervous. So you're so right when you say in the morning, you can say to your son, oh, so what are your plans today? And here's a little list of what I need, you know, to accomplish. And just make sure to have it done by this evening. So where are you going? What are your plans? Like in a nice way, instead of when they have the keys and they're leaving, they hate hearing, where are you going?
Right.
Right.
Right. 100%. That sense of independence, you know, it needs to really be recognized by parents. You, the last thing you want is for a kid to feel choked when they're coming home and seeing you for, you know, all of 3 weeks.
Right. I want to take the subject just a little different, and I want to bring up how to deal with the situations when the oldest siblings have an unfiltered device. And often they let their younger siblings or siblings, you know, whatever, play with their phone or their iPad or whatever.
Right. So, you know, really all we're talking about tonight centers around an idea of communication and discussion and openness and relationship and connection. If you have a relationship and there's an open dialogue, you know, with a child, regardless of what age that child is, you can essentially say anything that you want to say, as long as the kid feels respected, as long as the kid feels understood. So if you have an older child that for whatever reason made a decision, you might agree with it, you might not agree with it, separate subject. But the kid has made a decision that you as a parent don't feel is appropriate to expose other kids to. Part of the connection, part of the relationship, and part of the dialogue is to be able to say to that kid, listen, you made a choice. I might not agree with it. I do agree. I don't agree based on circumstance, but I certainly respect it. And I respect your ability to make these decisions and learn and grow in the way that you need to. But I am asking you to not expose the younger kids to, you know, an unfiltered device or whatever it is. I'm sure you only have good intentions, but there's a lot of stuff out there that I'm not comfortable with. And out of respect to us and the family rules, I would just ask for you not to do that. I really appreciate, you know, the cooperation. And again, this is not judging you in any way, just making a request vis-a-vis the other kids.
So it's so important to do that from the beginning when they get home, because once they get home and hand it already, and the mother then or the father sees them handing it, then it becomes a bigger problem. So it's best to plan that before they get home, on a phone conversation, or when they get home. Well, we're running out of time. I can go on another whole show with you to continue, but we're running out of time, and I just want to wish you a very, very good, safe Chakash B'Sameach, and thank you for always being there for the cloud.
And thank you and for all the work, and really thank Mask. And I was speaking to my daughter who's finishing up social work school, and she's working in a particular center. And she says many of the parents really enjoy, you know, a lot of the services that Mask provides. So I got, you know, that side of the view.
Thank you. And I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos. And always remember, hang in. Hold on and virtually still hug tight. Tonight's show is in honor of all the Chayalim. Bring the hostages home now. Please consider to go online to maskparents.org and donate so that we could continue to do all of our programs. Thank you and have a good night.
Imagine a place where tradition meets luxury. The Sleepy Hollow Hotel in Tarrytown, newly renovated, featuring a stunning exterior, beautiful rooms, and an inviting lobby, a stunning pool, and a spa, plus a shul and a mikveh right on site.
And executive host is Menachem Weinstock.
Savor the flavors of Pesach with Chef Shimmy. Fresh food that will delight your senses.
Things do rides, caricature arts, concerts, Yom Tov show, carnival games, xylophone play.
201-777-0212.